In the United States, the average American woman has 1.87 children. About 85% of couples will be able to conceive in their first year of trying, and 7% of couples will be able to conceive in their second year of trying. But infertility affects about 10% of women between the ages of 15 and 44 in the U.S. Half of these couples who have difficulty conceiving do not consider their condition to be infertility. About 30% of infertility cases can be attributed solely to the female, 30% can be attributed solely to the male, and 30% can be attributed to the combination of both partners. And about 10% of cases simply have an unknown cause. Globally, we know that 15% of couples will have trouble conceiving. That is about 50 million people that will experience infertility. My guest today is Nava Carmen. She's been in practice for 22 years and works with tricky patients who have been run through the ringer and a very emotional journey of infertility. Today, we talk about fertility in men and women. Why does the medical system always think that infertility is a part of the fault of the woman? And we talk about how we can create greater equality in how we approach fertility by using traditional Chinese medicine and really truly listening in depth to our patients and helping to unweave what is causing unexplained infertility. This is The Lindsay Elmore Show. Welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show, a podcast for people who deserve to be healthy, with honest, open, and enlightening conversations with doctors, thought leaders, creatives, and spiritual gurus. You'll walk away with simple and tangible tips and tricks that allow you to live your healthiest life so you can pursue your dreams, overcome obstacles, and leave your mark. Nava Carmen has been in practice for 22 years and spends most of her time working with tricky, multifaceted reproductive immunology issues in women over 40, such as recurrent miscarriages, unexplained fertility, and multiple failed artificial insemination cycles, as well as supporting diverse folks in bigger and trans bodies on their reproductive journey. When she isn't practicing, Nava spends time mentoring other practitioners and runs the Fertility Support Trained Community. You can check out her training over on www.fertilitysupport.training, which houses the advanced level diploma in fertility acupuncture. This is the most comprehensive integrated medicine course available to help traditional Chinese medicine practitioners gain an in-depth understanding of how some of the most complex areas of issues in fertility, such as how the immune system plays a role and how traditional Chinese medicine can support artificial reproductive techniques like IVF, IUI, and ICSI. Nava Carmen, welcome to the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm very excited to talk to you because as I was preparing for today's show, an estimated 15% of couples will have trouble conceiving at some point in their reproductive health journey. And 9 of the 10 countries with the highest total fertility rate are actually in Africa and Afghanistan. And so infertility is a byproduct in some ways of our modern way of living. And so start us out by just describing what do you see as the root causes of infertility, and why does it disproportionately affect developed countries?
It's a really interesting question. There's a lot of controversy about where it affects people more. So, for example, if we look at male fertility statistics, it predominantly affects people in Scandinavia, in Europe more than it does in developing countries. So there's when you're looking at research and data, there's a skewed way of looking at it. So I want to kind of take a step back and look at the big picture, because there are some commonalities all over the world. And those commonalities are often cultural commonalities. So, for example, we're looking at women more than men. And so there's cultural things that will stop men coming forward or being seen as part of the equation. We're looking at environmental factors, so accessibility for good food, fresh food, organic food. We're looking at issues such as money. So if you're having, for example, if you're a same-sex couple in Europe, how are you going to find the money? In England, for example, if you're a lesbian couple, you're not allowed to do artificial insemination. So you have to find at least £10,000 to go and do IVF.
Wait. What? What? Oh, that makes my blood boil a little bit.
Fertility is different all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, when we're talking about infertility, it's a big blanket, because there are such things as, for example, if you heard the term socially infertile. So that's what sort of thing I'm talking about. Like, they're not infertile per se, but society makes them infertile. Mm. So we know things like autoimmune diseases are on the rise. About 4 million people in the UK have autoimmune diseases. So there's a sort of 3-9% increase over the last few years in that. We have to look at epigenetics too. So when we're looking at developing countries, we're looking at potentially the effects of many years of war and famine and trauma, and how that affects the next generations down. So we might not even be looking at a fertility issue that is of the moment, but is several generations back. Mm-hmm. So it's a complex and multi-layered issue.
It's very complex and multi-layered. And we've had many discussions on the show with Dr. Erica Gray, with Dr. Kara Fitzgerald, about epigenetics and how we can shift our epigenetic expression towards the positive. And autoimmunity, as you mentioned, is so on the rise. And oftentimes it's a byproduct of environment and the way that we are eating. And so talk to us a little bit more about these concepts that infertility is a woman's problem. How did we get to that point as a culture, and how are you working to shift that perspective?
I think, like many institutions, are patriarchal. I think fertility institutions are just another expression of that same thing. So it's often women driven. So by and large, my practice is the women have come to me, and then their husbands or their partners come after. So it's often women who are driving fertility conversation due to cultural conventions, due to the biological clock, for whatever reason. So they present in clinic. Then the doctor who sits in front of them has often been brought up in that paradigm where they look at the woman and they look at the egg quality is the biggest factor. And they look at egg quality only in the terms of how old are you, not what is your lifestyle like, what is your internal environment like, what is your immune system, your hormone levels like. They only look at this binary thing of age and numbers. So there are many ways to shift people's responsiveness to fertility and to IVF cycles. And then they don't really look at men. And I have come to think over the years that they don't do that because they don't have very many options for treating men. So let's just say, for example, sperm test. We know that there's been a 50% decline in the last 50 years in terms of sperm quality, quantity, the shape of them. And they look at a sperm test. And so they look at now a test that has been adjusted for the modern day. So what was acceptable 10 years ago, what wasn't acceptable 10 years ago, is now acceptable. Mm-hmm. And they look at it and they think, okay, well, it's fine. And if it's not a problem, we'll use ICSI, which is a technique where they actually take a sperm that looks visually okay and shove it into the egg and hope that that does the trick. And if that's the solution to all their problems, why would they look further at the man? Because they don't have anything to do to fix things, or very few people do much to fix things. And that's very traditionally the way of looking at it. But of course, we know, and I've seen your show, I've seen all the people talking on your show, there are so many tools out there. We can look at the DNA of sperm now, and with the work we do as fertility acupuncturists or as functional medicine people, we can change the DNA of sperm. We can alter hormones in men, which improve the DNA of sperm. We change their epigenetic history by understanding what's going on. Mm-hmm. So when I look at a sperm test, I know that one parameter being off means you're twice as likely to be infertile as a man. Two parameters off, you're six times as likely. All three parameters being off, you're 15 times as likely to be infertile. And it comes with a whole series, just like when you're looking at women's menstrual health, for example, their menstrual health is a outward expression of what's going on inside their body. Same for men. The sperm quality is an outward expression of all of the risk factors that may be happening in their health that aren't being attached or attracted or seen by doctors as being worthy of attention.
Mm-hmm. I took some hate on social media because I was teaching people that, like, listen, severe debilitating menstrual cramps are not normal. It's a signal. In traditional Chinese medicine, we know that the liver governs our blood. And when the qi gets stagnant inside of the liver, it causes these abnormalities in the menstrual cycle. So I'd love to, I do want to focus on women, since our primary audience that's listening today are women. But I'd also like to go back to what you just said, which is frankly shocking, which is we've had a 50% decline in sperm quality and quantity. Why do you think that we have had such a rapid escalation in the recent past in this decline of fertility? And my guess is you also have some statistics about how fertility has declined in women as well.
Those statistics are harder to find. The statistics are usually related to age, slightly different than the way statistics are talked about or read in men. So I think that fertility isn't declining in women per se, but I think women's overall health and the expectation of how well they feel in their lives and what they are expected to juggle in their lives has changed, and that has a knock-on effect. Mm-hmm. Pardon me, tell me the first bit of your question again. I got stuck on the second bit.
Sure. So we were just talking about why have sperm quality and quantity declined over so rapidly over the past 10 to 20 years.
I'm going to take a leaf out of a professor, an American professor called Shanna Swan, who wrote this amazing book called Countdown, which I'd recommend everybody read. And she puts it down to a number of really crucial factors. One being the lack of attention culturally that men pay to having regular checkups. It's built into women's lifestyles to have mammograms or smear tests, and we have evidence every month of how we're doing if something's wrong. But men don't tend to go to the doctor unless it's under duress. That's one of the things. The second thing is environment, and particularly things that are endocrine disruptors. So we have an environment that we live in with a huge abundance of phthalates and plastics and chemical exposures, a lot of it hidden and not discussed, that has a really profound effect, and not just on male sperm, but actually goes on to talk about mammalian and animal reproduction. The animals are suffering the same way. Mm. And then the third part of it is age. It's a bit of a fallacy that you can go on to have babies, you know, forever. Men's DNA ages, men's sperm ages. So actually the older men get, the poorer quality of the sperm is too. So there's some cultural reconditioning needing to be done about the need for everybody to have children when they're younger, not just women. Oftentimes that is bypassed because, for example, I've heard many a urologist say to a man with poor sperm, don't worry, even though it's your wife's eggs are fine and your sperm is not okay, we'll just get egg donation. So we'll get a younger egg in the mix, because we know that younger eggs have the amazing and miraculous ability to overcome DNA problems in older sperm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there's a lot of factors in there that we look at that we consider when we understand why men's sperm has been declining.
Mm-hmm. So how do you approach your patients? How do you navigate the diagnosis? And then what are some of the most important treatment interventions that you use regularly to help support people who are going through infertility? And then take a step back and just go, even before you're ready to get pregnant, here are the things you can do to care for yourself so that when you decide to get pregnant, you're already set up for success.
So I've been in practice almost 23 years, and my area of specialty is actually reproductive immunology, meaning the influence of the immune system on people's fertility. And under that banner comes things like unexplained infertility, multiple failed IVFs, recurrent miscarriage, endometriosis, PCOS, anything that's going on in the body, any autoimmune disease that's happening in the body. Because of the nature of the clients that I see, a lot of the time they've been through the ringer. And so I'm kind of like a little fertility detective when it comes to that. So I bring them in And the most important thing I do is I spend time with them and I talk to them, because that is not a thing that happens regularly.
It's so shocking, right? You have to like actually talk to your patients and listen to them in order to make good clinical decision making. Good night. If modern medicine could just learn that one thing, we would transform the medical system.
Unbelievably so. Mm-hmm. And we, as fertility acupuncturists, myself and everyone I've trained, we sit in between the client and the doctor. We find out information the doctor doesn't find out. Stuff is important to us. Like, you know, your grandmother having rheumatoid arthritis is an important fact to me in your fertility. You never know. You know, it takes me 90 minutes with a client to understand everything I need to know. And in that time, inevitably, I've picked up things that have been missed. I have a really good, and so does everyone I train, a really good understanding, not only of biomedicine, but of all the tests and all the options and all the things that are available. So we can develop a program for a client that pulls together whatever paradigm they need. So it might be surgery, or it might be nutrition, or it might be Chinese medicine, or it might be therapy, whatever it is, we pull together for them. And we make a program that gets them where they need to go. And we empower them with questions to ask and push back to the medical system they're in, so as to get the best out of that too.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So, you know, talk to us a little bit more, because I think our listeners may be very interested. And, you know, I, as a pharmacist, I always tell people a pharmacist will stand in the gap. And that's exactly what you just said. A pharmacist will stand in the gap and prevent patients from getting the wrong drugs, the wrong dose, the wrong frequency, that just so many layers of wrong that can happen in medicine. And I would love to know more now about, you know, give us more details, I guess, about, you know, you mentioned nutrition, you mentioned testing, just give us the nitty gritty about what are you looking for and how do you go through this detective work? And if someone who is listening can't find somebody like you who is there to stand in the gap, what questions can they take to their OBGYN or their infertility specialist?
So the most important takeaway, if anyone is listening, that I'd like them to know is that you can't, if there's any question that there may be issues with your fertility, you can't expect to leap in and solve the problem straight away, even with IVF. Mm-hmm. The most important time in any pregnancy is actually what you do before you get pregnant. It takes at least 3 cycles or 100 days for men to completely change everything that's going in, for the body to go in and recruit a follicle that makes an egg that has an egg growing in it that eventually ends up ovulating. It's a whole 3-month process. So you need to take the time to change everything in the body, so you change the environment in which that egg is recruited and matured. So the specifics of what I'd be looking for if someone's starting on this journey and they think they have a problem is to track their cycle. Use a basal body temperature. There's lots of great books and great information on the web about that. Track what's happening in your cycle. If you are in pain around ovulation, if you have premenstrual symptoms, if you have pain with your period, if you have flooding, all of these things that you may have grown up to consider normal are not. I don't want my clients to have any of those things.
Preach, preach.
I want them to have a good spectrum of tests that are done around day 2 or 3 of their cycle, that check their hormone levels, that have a full thyroid panel, that check their vitamin levels, something that checks after they ovulate their progesterone levels so they can see how well or if they've been ovulating. Perhaps it would be useful for people, if they can afford it, to have a tracking cycle, meaning they have a scan that looks at the growth of their follicles, their lining, their recruitment of those follicles, the number they have, whether there's too much estrogen going around their body. All of these things can be checked on a scan. And at the same time as the scan is happening, you can also pick things up like endometriosis, polycystic ovaries, fibroids, polyps, adenomyosis. So it's a lot of things that are kind of like baseline investigations that I want to have my clients do. And then we layer on top of that some really interesting stuff, which comes with a lot of fabulous research, which is looking at the microbiome in the body. So, for example, I don't know if you're aware of this, but if you have problems with your dentistry, with your mouth, with your teeth, with gingivitis, anything like that, that can actually show up in the placenta. Mm-hmm. So your oral microbiome is just as important as your vaginal, your gut microbiome, in what's happening in terms of the environment in your body, of that those eggs are being recruited and matured and lived in for that time. So we see people, for example, who've had a history of, let's say, STIs. They have been caught and treated.
Which are sexually transmitted infections. For our listeners, they may be more familiar with the older, out-of-date term, sexually transmitted diseases or STDs, but they're not diseases, they're infections.
Yep, very different, and very different connotation and feeling we bring to that, because Absolutely. It happens and it's a fact of life and we want to deal with it. And similarly, if you've had, for example, 15 years ago, a case of horrible food poisoning and you've never quite been the same since, actually understanding the impact of those things on the internal environment and the knock-on effect on your mood, on your egg quality, this is huge stuff. You know, 80 or 90% of the body's neurotransmitters are in the gut. And we as acupuncturists can affect and regulate the gut and the nervous system. And we as herbalists can get to grips with what we need to support a better microbiome. And we as nutritionists have huge tools to repopulate the gut and therefore change your fertility.
Mm-hmm. I am a huge fan of working on the microbiome. And I teach a lot about just how important the microbiome is to our cognition, to our mood, to our motivation, to our creativity. And I love that you're bringing in this different perspective about how your microbiome is also very key for your fertility. And we know that the microbiome is the easiest to manipulate and to shift and to culture within the first 3 years of life. So you, mom and dad, having a healthy microbiome passes on a healthy microbiome to the children, which helps with what we were talking about at the very beginning, those epigenetic ticks that help us to stay healthier throughout our lifespan. And so I'd love to talk now about birth control pills and oral contraceptives, copper IUDs, the drug-eluting IUDs. I think that it is astonishing. We've talked to Gerald Posner on this show, the author of Pharma, Lies, Greed, and the Poisoning of America, about how women were straight up used as test subjects when the first oral contraceptives came out. And that's where we started having these huge instances of blood clots and strokes because the doses of the drugs were 10 times, 50 times what they are now. And we prescribe oral contraceptives to very, very young girls for acne, for menstrual cramps, for all kinds of things. What is your opinion on birth control pills and its impacts on fertility later down the line, even 10 years down the line after people have been taking birth control pills?
They can be quite significant, particularly, for example, if you're given oral contraceptive pills because you haven't properly been diagnosed as a young teen with polycystic ovaries. So maybe you have acne, or you have irregular menstrual cycles or something like that. And so you're given the contraceptive pill to, quote, regulate that. But what happens is it masks a whole load of problems. And when people come off the pill, they have this rebound effect and it can be catastrophic in their body. We see post-pill amenorrhea, meaning no periods. And I'd also like to make the point that to anyone listening that a pill period is not a real period. They are very different beasts. So having a regular period while you're on the pill doesn't really mean much for us. And having long swathes of time while you're on the period can be really detrimental too. So if you're going to do it, and there is a place for it for some people, take breaks. See what your body does when you're not on it. Understand what's happening underneath. Don't leave it till you're ready to have a baby to then come off it and see the effect of it in your body.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any opinions on, because people are always asking for natural contraception. And of course, we have condoms, both male and female condoms. There's diaphragms that have varying degrees. And then, you know, I've looked a lot at papaya seeds as far as inhibiting male fertility. Are there more natural options that can help? Because, you know, we have to understand that the desire to have a child is equal and opposite as the desire to not have a child. Before we get to the rest of my interview, let's take a break for a word from our sponsors. Soma Vedic is the ultimate EMF protection. It is designed on the principle of controlled release of energy from precious and semi-precious stones. This allows you to create a coherent field covering more than 2,800 square feet. That's right. It forms a bubble of protection against electromagnetic frequencies, including 4G and 5G, Wi-Fi, and your cell phones, and it protects against oxidative stress and free radicals. The Somavedic Ruby and the Vedic models are there to help repair cellular damage from non-native EMF exposure. It helps the body to repair itself from the harmful effects of EMF. The balancing effects reach a 100 feet radius in all directions. And that's not all. Somavedic can also help to harmonize your water. Somavedic creates structure in your water that helps it to benefit our bodies more. By creating hexagonal patterns, water is reorganized into its natural state, just like nature intended. You can head over to www.somavedic.com and use the code LKE to save 10% off. That's www.somavedic, that's SOMAVEDIC.com, and use the code LKE to save 10%. Be sure to shop using the code so that Somavedic knows that we sent you. And now, let's get back to the show. So, are there some more natural options that are going to give a more real period and not just the estrogen and progesterone withdrawal periods that we see with oral contraceptives?
It's a great question. And I would love to talk about this with more people because it leads to the question about getting to know your body, which benefits us as women and benefits us way before we want to become mothers. Mm-hmm. So I alluded earlier to the basal body temperature chart. Well, the tracking method where you get to know your body and you get to know your cycle and you get to understand where your period of fertility is hugely important. So for example, people who are not big fans of condoms may choose to either avoid the time that they're fertile or may choose to use some form of barrier protection just in their fertile time. But it helps you to get you to know your body really well. You can see what's going on with it. You can see when something's not right. You can see if you've ovulated early or late. And it gives you a huge amount of information that you can take to a professional like us to say, okay, something's not right. How can we sort this out now? And I strive to get my clients to ovulate at the right time to give them a 28 to 32 day cycle. It's like an optimum cycle from a fertility point of view. The egg is of optimum maturity that way. But in getting them there, we also give them a regularity and a knowledge of their body so they can go ahead and they can choose when they want to get pregnant and when they don't.
Mm-hmm. It's very powerful, not just the basal body temperature, but the cervical mucus method and just like really taking into account, I know my body well enough to know that when this is occurring, it is giving me a clear and complete sign that I am in the middle of ovulation, that I am the most fertile. And so just to remind our listeners, you know, you mentioned earlier that you love to do hormone panels, thyroid panels on about day two of the cycle. Well, that's day one of the cycle is the day that you start bleeding. And then ovulation is about day 14 when the cervical mucus is very thin, when your basal body temperature is changing first thing in the morning. And it also harkens back to something that I think is so important. In functional medicine, problems with estrogen and progesterone are the tip of the iceberg. If you have problems with estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, you probably have thyroid problems and you probably have cortisol or insulin problems, either from stress or, as you alluded to, perhaps undiagnosed PCOS, which Dr. Casey Means taught us on the show, is we might as well call PCOS insulin resistance of the ovaries. That's exactly what it is. It's an insulin problem. And so when people come to you, we have to meet people where they are, you know? And like you said, most people have been through the ringer, and infertility is such a dramatic, emotional roller coaster. And I think, especially for women, it's hard coded in us that if we cannot become a mother when we are choosing to become a mother, that it is a failure of our femininity. So how do you help people process the emotional turmoil while also saying, like, we got to change the way that you eat, we got to change the way you exercise, we're going to do this basal body temperature methods? How do you deal with the emotional load, which may actually be the root cause of the cortisol problem that's causing the estrogen and progesterone problems?
So Chinese medicine sees everything as qi. So emotions are qi also. Mm-hmm. And emotions have their expression, as you alluded to, the liver has a function. The liver's emotion, associated emotion, is anger. Mm-hmm. So we look at the different bits of the body that are being affected, and we look at things from an emotional point of view as well as a physical point of view. That said, a lot of my clients are type A clients, and we support them emotionally by giving them knowledge and a plan. Because it's the feeling of being out of control so often that is massively triggering to all of that emotional upheaval, the idea that they've been able to work hard and get what they want from life in so many areas, and then they try and have a baby and it doesn't work, and it's just really, really difficult because they can't control it. So empowering with information, treatment, targets, results, you know, diagnoses, hugely empowering from an emotional point of view too. And also speaking personally, because of the way I work really closely with psychologists and hypnotherapists. So understanding the sphere of your competency, in my opinion, is also really important. I don't want to overstep in, for example, I'm not trauma trained, and some of my clients have trauma. They need to be referred. So I will do my area, and someone who is trauma trained will support my client in that way. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a balance between understanding how to treat the qi, treat the person, and also to know when to refer, because the fertility journey is hard. And having people who specialize in that in my back pocket is such a gift.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And so let's talk now, because you mentioned at the very, very beginning of the episode that we need to shift our perspective and equally value the man and the woman as a part of the fertility journey. Let's talk more about other marginalized populations that have this social infertility that you alluded to right at the beginning.
So we talked a little bit about same-sex female couples, but another way to look at it also is people who are living in bigger bodies. Mm. Now, BMI is used as a stick to beat people with, certainly in the UK, and a lot of clients of mine are denied access to an IVF clinic and to treatment because of their BMI. Mm. And we know BMI, for example, is a very outdated concept. And certainly in my practice and how I teach the health at every size method. So let me give you a living example so this makes sense to your listeners. I had a client who came from American Indian extraction. She was a very solidly built, very healthy woman who ran marathons, ate beautifully, and was super healthy. Her husband was the person who had the problem, and they needed IVF due to his fertility problems. But because of her physical build, because of her genetic inheritance, her BMI was high because she was heavily muscled and a solid person, mm-hmm. but super healthy. So she was denied access to treatment. She had to go on a starvation and an unhealthy diet to shift her BMI down in order to access treatment. So there is a form of eugenics, it would not be too extreme for me to say, happening in the medical field. When we're looking at people in bigger bodies, or we're looking at same-sex couples, or looking at people who have the theoretical access, but not, or this theoretical right to care, but not access through money. So it's not an equal system for everybody. It's very much a system that preferences people who are white, people who are thin, people who are willing to put money or can put money there. So the equality in the system is missing. So a lot of the time I'm treating or I'm teaching in a way that empowers clients to understand this and to be able to stand in their power when they're navigating this system. So my job is to validate their experience of, yes, this is wrong. What you feel is not right is not right. Here are the tools, techniques, tricks. Here are the ways we can help you navigate this. So these nonsense things are no longer a barrier to you being able to have children.
One of the things that I love the most about Ayurvedic medicine is that it distinguishes the kapha the pitta, and the vata body types. The vatas, the tall, skinny people that could not gain weight if they tried. The pittas, like me, that fluctuate between, you know, having a little bit of extra fat or a little bit less fat, and can just, we have so much digestive fire that we are able to burn fat easily. But then there's the kapha people who are more grounded, more earthy, and have larger body sizes and can be healthy even at those larger weights and those larger BMIs. I think about my brother. My brother goes in, my brother's a professional baseball player, has been for 15 years, and now he's a coach in the Major League Baseball. And he goes in and he's deemed overweight or obese based on BMI. But he's solid as a rock. That's just how he is built. And if we really looked at, okay, so somebody has a bigger BMI, but are they carrying a bunch of visceral fat? Are they carrying a bunch of toxic fat? Or are they just full of muscle and metabolically active brown fat that is actually doing them benefit? And also in functional medicine, we look for people who are what are called skinny fat. So they look skinny, but they're carrying around excess triglycerides, excess visceral fat. They appear to be thin, but they are not metabolically well. And so we actually go through flow charts as we're analyzing people's bodies. And, you know, I'm a much bigger fan of using maybe a bioimpedance scale or even using a full-on DEXA scan to analyze body composition so that we can truly, truly see what is going on in the body. I interviewed Virgie Tovar on the show, who I truly believe is going to change the world. And she wrote a book called You Have the Right to Remain Fat. And she kept saying that fat people are not failed skinny people. And she really opened my eyes that when we see people who are of larger sizes, I think that the character of Kate on This Is Us is a great example of this. The entire show is about her being overweight. Her entire character's journey is centered around this fact that she is overweight. And it's so skewed in the way that we perceive people who have larger body sizes, even though we know from research, I was telling my friend the other day about studies that we have that show that sumo wrestlers, though they are, quote, air quotes, morbidly obese, because they're working out all the time, because they are physically well, because they're eating well, they don't have the same cardiovascular risk factors as someone who is overweight and inactive. I want to go back as well. You mentioned estrogenics and estrogens in the environment. I interviewed Dr. Anthony Jay, the author of Estrogeneration, on the show about all of the harm that estrogens in our environment are doing to our fertility, as well as just our overall health in general. What other bad habits do you see clients having that are impacting their infertility?
One of the things that we talk about a lot is detoxing their bodies. Mm-hmm. So women eat the equivalent of a lipstick a year. And if you're eating
it, and that's so gross,
like, that's not fun for you.
We eat the equivalent of a credit card's worth of plastic each and every week because microplastics are everywhere. And I can't recall her name off the top of my head, but much of it that we talked about during her episode was about how microplastics have become so pervasive, we're never going to get rid of them, ever, ever. They're never going anywhere. And same thing with all these chemicals that DuPont was more than happy to pour into the environment, the PFAS and the PFOS, that are forever chemicals. We will never, ever, ever be rid of them again.
That's quite right. And so when we're looking at our clients, we're asking them, what are you cleaning your house with? What are you putting on your body when you shower or wash your hair or put on deodorant or makeup? Are you cooking in food that then goes warm into plastic Tupperware? Are you reusing or buying water in plastic bottles as opposed to glass? There's a whole load of stuff we look at with clients that helps them lower the estrogenic ratio. And of course, Chinese medicine looks at estrogen, we call it blood stasis, and it shows up in so many ways that we can actually help them deal with from a Chinese medicine point of view. So menstrual migraines due to excess estrogen or fibrocystic breasts, or we have loads of tools that will help the body start to work on that. I don't know if you have in America the Dutch test.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay, so we use the Dutch a lot. We look at which pathway are they metabolizing their estrogen down. And we can actually help them with Chinese medicine to help push them into the right pathway.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Let's talk about estrogen dominance. I feel like that has become like such a buzzword. What is estrogen dominance and how do you know that you have it? What are we looking for? All of those things.
Estrogen dominance is when your body isn't actually able to excrete the estrogen you make properly.
Hey, thank you. Oh, thank you for emphasizing the profound importance of, in functional medicine, when you have hormone problems, production, transport, cellular sensitivity, and the most important of them is detox. We have to be able to detox estrogens. Thank you.
You're very welcome. So brace yourself, because I'm just going to mention the P word, which is poop. So if you're only pooping once a day and it's not emotionally satisfying, that can indicate that your estrogen is being held in your body. If you're having menstrual migraines, if you're having lumpy breasts or sore breasts that happen before your period every month, these are all things that could be to do with estrogen not clearing out of your body. And if you have conditions, for example, such as endometriosis, that in itself is an estrogen dominant condition. So we've got to ask you to look at all of the reasons that that might be happening. And people like you and I help people to do that. But, you know, there's a range of symptoms. Brain fog can be estrogen dominance. Fatigue can be estrogen, you know, low libido, mood swings. There's a whole lot of stuff that women carry that they think is normal, but they don't understand is not. So if they, you know, if people who are listening today take anything away, it's to know that you have the right to go through your day without headaches, without underlying anxiety, without feelings of stress, without feeling overwhelmed, without having period, all the things. And there are tools out there to help you get there.
Absolutely. I mean, I think if, you know, if you really want to live a healthy life, I think step one is figure out how to have less stress in your life. And there's nothing that stress makes better. And there's no disease that stress won't make worse. And so we have to figure out how to stress less. I'd like to end our conversation today just giving any of our listeners who have struggled with infertility, who perhaps have had recurrent miscarriages, which carry a huge emotional toll, give us some hope. What gives you hope in your practice day after day?
Probably the hundreds of babies I've been involved in helping come into the world over the last two decades. And when we see, all of us see acupuncturists I work with, see in our practice, these things happen every day. And particularly for those of us who choose to specialize in the complex cases, we see it happen all the time with women over 40. So it's really important to emphasize that age is drummed into us as a barrier, but that it needn't be. It's much more about the things that you and I have been talking about today, about getting healthy, than it is about the age you are. So resource yourself. Go and find someone like me. Go and find someone like Lindsay and find out what you can do to make your internal environment as healthy as possible, because that's what will give you a healthy baby, a healthy pregnancy, a better postpartum experience, and a really healthy family.
Oh, I love it so much. Thank you so much, Navak, for coming in today and being on the show. Where can people find out more about the work that you do? And for any of our listeners over in the UK, where can they find you?
So I have a really long waiting list. So I always recommend that you see someone I've trained. So I'm going to give you the website where you can find everyone I've trained. It's fertilitysupport.expert. www.fertilitysupport.expert. There's about 100 more people coming down the pipeline, so you'll see them later this year.
Oh, congratulations on stepping it up and not only helping couples and people to create the families that they desire, but also for passing your knowledge on to another generation, because I think that when we're involved in these natural realms, it's so important for us to train more people because medical school's not going to do it. And pharmacy school is not going to do it. Nursing school is not going to do it. And so I'm so grateful that you share your knowledge with others and shared it today here on the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you've been struggling to feel your best and feel like that food, sleep, relaxation, none of it is truly working, maybe you need to up your game with some infrared light and negative ion therapy. Infrared light penetrates deep into your body, going through your skin to muscles, nerves, and bones. Infrared light then helps to boost local circulation, bringing oxygen and anti-inflammatory molecules, as well as flushing away toxins. Therefore, infrared heat has been shown to reduce muscle pain, joint pain and stiffness, arthritic pain. It also helps to reduce stress and fatigue and supports the immune system. Negative ions act as attractors to bacteria and allergens in your environment, and they can help to inhibit free radical oxidation as well as reduce exposures to heavy metals, viruses, and other harmful elements, and can help to balance the body and the mind. The Amethyst Biomat is specifically designed to help provide infrared light as well as negative ions by electrically charging a mat full of amethyst crystals. It truly is an amazing experience to lay on a biomat. I have one as well as the tourmaline and amethyst pillow, and they have become part of my daily relaxation routine. If you want to get one of your very own amethyst biomats, head to lindsayelmore.com/biomat and you can be on your way to relaxation and less stress and fatigue throughout your day. Head to lindsayelmore.com/biomat to shop now. The Lindsay Elmore Show is written and produced by me, Lindsay Elmore. Show segments are produced by Sue Procco and Derek Lugo. Sound design and editing is by Jive Media. Support the Lindsay Elmore Show by heading to lindsayelmore.com/podcast. Your contribution, no matter how big or how small, helps us to bring the best guests to the interview chair. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Share this and all of your favorite episodes with a friend and on social media. Be sure to tag at Lindsay Elmore Show and help us bring the pod to more people.